right, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Blind Side Blitz here on Grumblings Media. I am not Jimmy McPhee, in case anybody was wondering. I'm Big John, and much like Michael Corleone, every time I try to get out, they pull me back in. Yes, I've been asked to go back to my football roots, my football broadcasting roots here on Grumblings Media, and I'm happy to do so with my good friend here, Joe DeCapita. Joe, how are you tonight?
I'm good, man. Good, man. How are you?
I'm fine. And
ready to go.
Now, ready for go. Anybody out there, Jimmy McPhee is fine. He just had something else he had to, that came up at the last minute, so he gave me a quick call and he said, "Do you mind filling in?" No problem at all. Listen, before we get started, this is the Blindside Blitz right here on grumblingsmedia.com. Check us out on YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, anywhere you can think of, Truth Social, Getter, Gab, anywhere. We're everywhere. If there's a social media platform, Joe, we're on it. Just search for, we're all over it, at Grumblings Media, where we have plenty of different shows. Also check out, we got our basketball show, The Buzzer Beaters. We got politics for conservatives, for libertarians. Check it all out. Pop culture, red, white, and rude, points on the board, anything you can want. Basically, check it out. But let's put all that aside right now, Joe, because
Real quick, though, about the points on the board, though. They got their 100th episode coming up.
Yes, we did. And we do have it coming up. And let me see if I can pop this up. Otherwise, William will kill me. Here we go. Join the 100th episode of Points on the Board, the centennial episode, with fantasy sports legends Michael Fabiano, Hall of Famer in the Fantasy Sports Writers Association Hall of Fame, Bob Harris as well. These two guys, OG in the fantasy industry, they've been around for a long time, longer than even William Del Pilar and I have. And then join me and William as well. We're going to be talking about the history of fantasy sports, the book by author Larry Schechter. And listen, this is one of those rare cases where somebody can write a history about an industry and you've still got some old farts kicking, Joe, that can attest to some war stories, you know, like Fabs and Bob Harris, you know, two great guys and both Hall of Famers. William himself is a Hall of Famer. I'm the only one who does it. I feel like the guy without a PhD in a room full of doctors. I'm the only one not in that Hall of Fame yet. But we'll hopefully someone will sneak me in one of these days. But yeah, join us on Thursday. We'll live stream it at 10 a.m. Pacific time. We'll get it out there. So hopefully all of you can join. If you enjoy the Blitz, if you just enjoy hearing a couple of old guys tell some good war stories about fantasy sports, feel free to join us. That'll be right here at grumblingsmedia.com. Okay, Joe.
Right. Yes, sir.
Let's get started, brother.
Let's do that.
What do we got to talk about this week? What's on tap?
All right. So let's get right into it. You know, there's this whole mindset with fans about, you know, should when their teams start losing, like, should they we should tank. We should definitely tank. We want the higher up next year. We want to get the best quarterback, the best wide receiver, whatever it may be. Is tanking real, honestly? Like, everybody keeps bringing it up and saying, oh, we're going to tank for Shedeur Sanders this year. We're going to tank for Travis Hunter. So is tanking real, in your opinion?
So, listen, if we're giving the official story, the answer is no, because if tanking were real, I'm sure all our fine friends in the gambling industry would be very upset, right? Now, let's face it, the powers that be in Vegas understand that, right? So they factor tanking into their spreads, right? Into their odds.
Right.
No matter what anybody tells you, it's already factored in there. But the official line is, because they don't want lawsuits, right? Because you can imagine that if someone said, like, hey, I bet on the Giants to cover the spread, and you guys are telling me they threw that game, they're tanking on purpose, that caused material financial harm to me, right? So they're not going to do that. They'll never admit it. Now, on a practical level, tanking is real. It takes a lot of forms, right? Now, some tanking is so logical, Joe, that we accept it. If you're 2-10, if you're 2-11, Why are you going to have your star player out there taking hits, like especially a quarterback, right? You've got like let's look at say the Jaguars might come to mind, right? You've got a franchise quarterback. If he's getting killed behind a porous offensive line, why wouldn't I play Mac Jones at this point? Like, Lawrence is hurt. He's out. But yeah, I'm saying, let's say he was healthy, right? Wouldn't you be tempted to sit him, like, say, the last 2-3 games of the season?
See, that's the other thing, too, about, you know, your starters being out there. Because the second that you start sitting your starters, you're basically telling not only everybody around the league, but you're telling the NFL that's watching you, oh, we got a case that they're tanking. They're benching 5 or 6 of their starters because, you know, they're trying to lose games. If you do that and they see that, they can come after you and they could penalize you and it's not a good look for your fan base. It's not a good look for your player, your teammates, the players, right. Coaches. So I have a hard time with the whole tanking phrase because I think you can. In a way, there is tanking, in a way, whereas during the game, the coach might decide to go for it instead of just punt it away and kind of stay in the game.
Or kick a field goal. Yeah.
That can happen. But as far as, like, the players on the football field, they will never tank. They will never give up.
I agree with you that I doubt. I think – I'm sort of an optimist, right? So I'll say this. I don't think that there's players out there saying, we're going to go fumble. We're not going to give it 100%. I think they're professionals. I think they play with pride, or at least the overwhelming majority do. Right. But I think, like, to your point, there's certain strategies that you employ. Like, how many times do we even hear announcers going, you're 2-10, you might as well go for it on 4th-and-3. You're down. You might as well go for it. What have you got to lose, right?
Yeah.
So there is that approach. You're right. But I'm talking very specifically. Like, let's use the Jaguars because they still have a franchise quarterback, allegedly, in Trevor Lawrence. The Raiders and the Giants don't. So this doesn't apply to them. But let's use the Jaguars as an example. Why wouldn't they sit Trevor Lawrence? The NFL wants them to sit Trevor Lawrence because they don't want to see a potential franchise quarterback get injured in meaningless games. And I'm talking about meaningless games that mean nothing in terms of the playoffs, mean nothing in terms of revenue, but there's that future where you're like, the NFL wants as many potential Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrows as they can in the league. It's a quarterback-driven league, right? Mm-hmm. So with quarterbacks especially, which, let's face it, that's what the offenses are built around. Every NFL offense is built around its quarterback.
Yep.
Doesn't it make sense? Like, say you're the Jags. Again, I'll use them. What are they, 2-11 now? 2-12, whatever they are? 2-11? Yeah. Like, oh, no, sorry. They have pulled off the apps. The
upsets. Oh, that's right. They've got 3 wins.
They've got the third win, right? So they don't need a franchise quarterback, so they're not, quote, tanking for a QB.
No.
But they're like, do we really want Trevor Lawrence busting a knee? Do we want him getting a concussion? Do we want him to be another Tua? Of course not. Over a meaningless game, right? So that, to me, is a form of tanking, even though no one will call it tanking. If you look at someone like the Giants, when they get rid of a Daniel Jones, everyone knows my feelings about Daniel Jones. I'm not a Daniel Jones fan, but they cut him to avoid injury for financial reasons. Mm-hmm. But that has repercussions on the field, right? You're not playing anybody better than Daniel Jones when you put out Tommy Cutlets or Drew Locke, right? Yes. So are the Giants tanking now? Did they decide to tank when they got rid of Trevor Lawrence?
No, I don't think they decided to tank. I think the writing was on the wall. They were going to move on from Daniel Jones after this year regardless. And the fact that they were continuing to struggle at an abysmal level, they decided to pull the plug now and just flat out, let's not have to pay him his bonus, you know, after this season. Let's kind of move on. We've already made that decision, even in last season's draft or last year's draft.
Right.
They were going all in on trying to trade up to get Drake May. That's who they really wanted.
Right.
It didn't work out, so they were stuck with Jones this year, and now they've had it. So they've decided to just make that move right now and move on. Real quick with about the Jaguars, though, with Trevor Lawrence, let's just say Trevor Lawrence was healthy.
Yeah.
The problem with benching a starter is these coaches and the coaching staffs are trying to keep their jobs. They're not going to bench their top-end quarterback. They're not going to bench their high-level wide receiver, their great running back, what have you. So because their jobs are on the line. So I don't think even at a coaching level, for guys, especially guys that are fighting for their jobs,
that they're
going to maybe bench their starting quarterback or sit their running back more often than they normally would, because everybody has a job to try to keep. And in today's age of the NFL, there's not a whole lot of time to keep it.
Right. Like, unless you had buy-in from ownership, right? Like, ownership might be in a position where, like, because believe me, as a coach, if you're wrapping up, say, a 2-15 season, and your franchise quarterback gets an ACL tear, like think of the Robert Griffin, even though he was, you know, playing in the playoffs, but let's say your franchise quarterback gets his knee popped in that last meaningless game when you're heading for either the first or second pick in the draft. What do you think ownership is going to do then? I would argue that if the worst happens, your job is done, period, right? Like, you know how the media is. Why was so-and-so in a meaningless game? Why wasn't he pulled out? You know, you hear the same thing when you see a starter on special teams get hurt, right? Like, if someone puts a starting safety on their cover teams and the guy gets hurt covering a kick, what's the first thing all the media says? And let's face it, the media is what drives a lot of these firings, right? What's the first thing the media says? Why was this guy? Why was so and so? He's an all pro safety. Why was he on covering kicks? What's the matter with you people? Right? So I think that the coaches, in some weird sense, unless they've got a direct mandate from ownership,
right?
You got to play him to the end because I need to put butts in those seats, right? That's different.
Right. Ticket sales.
That's different.
Money.
Ticket sales. You're right. I got you. I agree with you. If you've got that mandate, then you're following orders, man. You're putting out whoever they tell you to put out. But I think if there's that understanding, see, it's a tough question for me. Like I would say that being a Giants fan, I've seen way too many 4-10 seasons that cost us a premier quarterback or cost us a premier player in the draft because we won some meaningless game in the final week of the season for pride. That dropped us 2-3 draft slots. I've seen it happen way too many times. Look at the Jets. You know, the same thing with them a couple years ago. You know, they swapped with, who was it, the Packers, and it ended up costing them the last offensive lineman in the draft. Was it 3 years ago? So I think it does happen. Now, the question I think you may be alluding to is it right that they tank? Is it like football morality if they tank?
See, I have a hard time with this again. Like, I don't think that there is tanking. I don't. And because there's too much on the line for every level. Like, if you're a bad coach, you're a bad coach, and you're going to continue to lose anyway, you're going to lose your job. We've seen Matt Eberflus lose his job. Dennis Allen lose his job. Those guys not Eberflus, but Allen was there a long time with the Saints. Eberflus was there for a couple years, but things weren't getting any better. They're just stagnant. So, okay, it's time to make a change. They're gone. If you have a team that is struggling, let's take the Patriots this season, because I've heard of a rumor which I think is absolutely crazy right now, but apparently Mayo is on the hot seat going down the stretch of this season. This is his first year, mind you.
Right.
This is his first year. He's a rookie head coach. He just drafted Drake May. Drake May didn't even get into on the football field until after midway point. And now they're starting to play a little bit better, at least on offense. So you mean to tell me that Drake May, all of a sudden, like in 1 year, you expected him to turn his football team around with a rookie quarterback and a subpar defense and an offense that doesn't have any weapons, that's ludicrous. So
now they're looking to get potentially, are the rumors that they're looking to get rid of him because they feel – do they feel he didn't produce – as weird as it sounds, he didn't produce fast enough? Or do they feel like Eberflus – like Eberflus just made way too many in-game mistakes, in my opinion.
Oh, terrible decision-making.
And then doubling down on them in these weird press conferences where he said, I'd do the same thing again, right? That guy needs to go, right?
Right.
But I don't think I've heard that from Mayo, right? Like, I know he's caught some criticism from the old man, right? He's caught some criticism from Belichick. Yeah, and Robert Kraft, but also Belichick came up and criticized him, I think, on a couple of shows. But is the general consensus that he's made, like, coaching mistakes, tacticals, and strategic mistakes?
The thing is going for these last four games of the season for the Patriots, he has to prove himself that they're not going to get blown out. That's all hearsay. It's all rumor.
Right.
Factual. But it's interesting for that kind of being leaked out of, it was some Boston newspaper. I can't really remember right now. But they are basically saying that depending on how the next four games go, Mayo might be on the hot seat and in jeopardy of losing a job that, honestly, he hasn't had enough time to turn around. Mm-hmm. You know, he just got the rookie quarterback, and now you're going to already make a decision on him? I think that's kind of crazy, and that's where it's kind of getting to a point where I don't know how much ownership is involved in this. I don't know how much of the GM is talking to the owner about this or trying to convince him, but it seems like we talk about lifespan of players and how short that is. Coaching right now is almost like on a yearly basis, and if you don't continue to produce, you're out.
You're right. They're under the even more scrutiny than like your number one overall pick. You know, you're absolutely right about that. Yeah. So they do have to deliver. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that what you're saying is true. But let me ask you this now. Right now, you've got the Raiders sitting with the number – if the season ended today, right, the Raiders would have the number one overall pick.
Yep.
The Giants are at number two. Mm-hmm. And you've got the Jags, I think, dropped to three by virtue of them not tanking and beating the Titans, I might add. If the season were to end today, Joe, you've got two obviously quarterback needy teams sitting atop the draft. Give me your if the draft were held today.
If the draft was held today,
who goes to the Raiders? Who goes to the Giants?
Okay, so first off, I'm going to say that I've done a very little bit of scouting on these quarterbacks. I'm not as familiar as I normally would be. But as we get closer to the draft, I'll definitely revisit this for sure. But let's say, okay, you've got the Raiders at one, you got the Giants at two. Number three is actually New England right now, which is interesting. And this is kind of like when we just spoke about Mayo possibly being on the hot seat. I don't buy it. But at three now, you've already got your quarterback. The Raiders are picking one. Everybody's debating on Shador, Cam Ward, or another quarterback. Who's going to be the top dog? Honestly, I don't think it's a quarterback. I don't. Mm. I think it's Travis Hunter, a guy who can play. He can play corner for you. He can play wide receiver for you. Now, my personal opinion on Travis Hunter is I would put him at corner, and I would rotate him in every once in a while at wide receiver. It's impossible to play at a high level at the NFL stage and
you
be able to play
anymore.
Both sides.
Yeah. You just can't do it anymore. Yeah.
So, but I think he's one of my most dynamic players that I would take. But as far as the quarterbacks go, and this is kind of always the hot and heavy topic everybody wants to talk about, there's limitations to every one of these guys' game. Shador Sanders, he might have the mindset of an NFL quarterback already. He might have the ability to read defenses. He's in the classroom constantly working on the X's and O's. But he does have to refine his game. And I understand that better coaching at the NFL level can help him get where he needs to be. But all too often, what I've seen from him specifically is when they play teams they're supposed to beat, they destroy them. That's great. You're supposed to. But then when you play tougher competition, he struggles mightily. And it's not even close. Like, that's what kind of concerns me is if you're destroying weaker opponents, cool. But when you go against any kind of competition, you struggle yourself. You're not able to kind of lift your team up and stay in the game throughout the duration. That to me is why it's a little shaky for me to take any of these kind of quarterbacks up high. And you look at Cam Ward. Yeah. And you look at Cam Ward too, a different type of quarterback, a guy who literally has a cannon for an arm. The dude just can lace the ball.
Right.
He has some mobility, but not as much as you would like to see out of him. He can make the plays, but again, he's inconsistent. So there's that part of his game where you're like, okay, what are we really getting? If we pick him in the top three, are we getting a guy who we could develop, or are we getting a damaged toy that we just can't seem to repair over the course of the next few years? So, I mean, to be honest with you, I have a couple other quarterbacks that I think are going to rise to the occasion as we get closer to the draft. Guys but like Dillon Gabriel from Oregon, I think that as we get closer to the draft, I foresee him climbing up the ladder. Now, the thing might – some people might say is like, oh, but, you know, why Dillon Gabriel? Well, Dillon Gabriel is a pro-level quarterback right now in college, has a ton of experience, played at Oklahoma for several years, moved to Oregon, his dream college that he's always wanted to play for, and has tremendous accuracy, has an adequate arm. He doesn't have a cannon, but he has an adequate arm. He's got mobility. He's got smarts. Those are key things that you need at the next level, at least to start. And then Garrett Nussemeier from LSU. That dude already has size, already big dude. But the only thing is he's a little inexperienced. He hasn't been playing for 2, 3, 4 years like some of these other quarterbacks have. He's got a year or two of experience under his belt. So he is a little, you know, a little green as he's going to be going into the draft. But a guy that has tremendous physical talents, size, mobility to go with it, strong arm, accuracy, can make all the throws, but you're going to have to work with them in the classroom a little bit on reading defenses and kind of honing in all those attributes.
You know, it's interesting because the only, in recent memory, the only quarterback draft, the only draft that there was like zero hype over any quarterback was the year that the Steelers took Pickett, and they ended up taking him, what, like 15th, 16th, right? That was the only one. Yep. Every year you're going to have at least two or three guys because, let's face it, teams have to, even if it may in retrospect not be smart, every team that's missing a quarterback can't win until they get a quarterback. So the question is, do you go into the free agent market to get one, or – do you draft one? Now, the Falcons kind of did both last year, right? They went into the free agent market. They paid a couple of hundred million for Cousins, and they drafted Penix, right? Now, assuming that you don't have the Giants and the Raiders that nuts about it, I don't see where the Giants are trading. Like, here in New York, there's these rumors, oh, they may go, you know, since the Vikings probably won't pay Darnold to stay with McCarthy there. Maybe Darnold kind of makes his way back to New York. I don't see the Giants taking that route, personally, knowing the Giants. Mm-hmm. Would the Raiders possibly consider trading for a QB or signing a QB, a free agent QB, and using that number one pick on Travis Hunter? Because I agree, Hunter is probably the best football player you could draft number one overall. I probably agree with you on that. But let's face it, no fan base, whether it's the Raiders or the Giants, are going to put up with, we got out of this season without at least taking a shot at a top QB when we have a top two pick, right? So in my opinion, like, both franchises go 1-2, whether it's Shadur Sanders, Cam Ward. Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders. I don't think anybody uses one of the first two picks on any of the guys you mentioned. And they may turn out being better quarterbacks in the long run. They may have better careers, right?
Yeah.
Like the kid from Oregon might turn out being another Bo Nix, right? So I see what you're saying, but let's be honest, right? The media, the way the current NFL is set up, right? You got to get that at least playoff caliber quarterback on that rookie 5-year deal, right? You have to. Otherwise, you have zero chance of getting to the Super Bowl, right? So if I put a gun to your head right now, who's it going to be? Who are the Raiders take? Let's assume they both take quarterbacks, Joe. Don't dodge the question. Who's going to go number one? Who's going to go number two?
If I'm staying there, and if this is what I would do, I wouldn't take either one.
No, who are the Raiders taking and who are the Giants taking? So you can let Joe DiCaprio off the hook. Tell me what you think the Raiders are going to do and what the Giants are going to do.
I'll say this. I think that if I was a betting man, I would probably take a guy like Cam Ward over Shedeur right now, because there's a lot that comes with Shedeur Sanders, and it's not just, oh yeah, you still got to further develop him and all that. It's you also, the Sanders name, you're getting his father, that's going to be kind of tied to the hip of him. Not to mention, I mean, I've seen clips of Deion Sanders going out of his way, kind of self-promoting the name, promoting his sons, saying, hey, you better draft my kid. You better draft both my sons.
Right.
You know, how much further is that going to go with whatever team takes him is another thing for me. Is it going to be too much of a distraction? If Shedeur does, in fact, fail when he makes it to the NFL, is Deion going to be in like, oh, well, it's the offensive coordinator's fault. You know, he sucks.
Or
the head coach sucks. He doesn't understand how to run a team. So it's to me, it's a difficult situation. Shedeur Sanders could end up being an amazing quarterback in the NFL. Maybe I'm completely wrong.
Right.
But there's just a lot that goes into it. So give me Cam Ward at number one. And a guy who has put the hard work in, has done amazing job with the opportunities that was given to him. And I'm willing to work with that guy, because body mechanics are one thing, but man, a guy that can not only hit his targets when his mechanics are in line, but also has that cannon for an arm, it's hard to kind of overcome. Give me Cam, and then I think Shedeur would go to the Giants.
See, now, I would be happy if that's what happened, Joe, because I'm a Giants fan. I would love to suck for Shedeur and get that guy on our team, because I like the kid. I think he's pro-ready in terms of something that is the most difficult to teach, and that is what he's got up here. I think he can read a defense. I think having a Hall of Fame father tutoring him for his entire life under center, I think that's something you can't buy. You can't teach later. You can't catch up. He's been swimming in that his entire life, Shedeur Sanders. So I think if it works out the way you just described, I'd be thrilled. But unfortunately, if I'm putting my betting hat on, given Shedeur Sanders' connection, or I should say Deion Sanders' connection to Tom Brady, Shedeur Sanders' connections to Tom Brady. Tom Brady has always loved that kid. He's always said he's something special.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they were at those quarterback camps together and everything. Brady has the association with the Raiders ownership.
Right.
I would not be surprised if Tom Brady picked up the phone if the Raiders stay at number one and said, like, guess what?
Yeah.
I'm a 7-time champ. Check out the rings. Seven fingers, right? Yes. And I think Shedeur should go number one. I think Mark Davis doesn't ignore that type of stuff, and he gets Shedeur on the team.
That brings it to another interesting thing, too. I'm very curious, because we all have heard about Tom Brady now being minority owner of the Raiders.
Right.
He is going to definitely be involved in some decision-making. We don't know to what degree, but it is he's going to be deciding, because Mark really does trust Tom Brady. And I get it, you know.
Winner, why wouldn't you? Right.
Won a ton of championships. Like, of course, you know. But my thing is, with Tom Telesco as GM, and it's his supposed to be his show on draft day. And what's to say that maybe before we even get to the draft, maybe in the off season, it'd be kind of funny how Tom Telesco, hey bud, your services are no longer needed. We're good.
I don't know if that's going to happen necessarily. But I wouldn't be surprised if Brady's voice sort of resonates. He's not a wallflower. He's not going to keep quiet. But what's an even more interesting point is something to consider, Joe. Tell me what you think about this. The team that drafts Shadur may be also drafting Dion in some weird way, right? Like, Like, look, I'm not saying he's going to be the head coach, right? Let's assume he goes to the Giants. Let's say the scenario plays out my way, goes to the Giants, or he ends up going to the Raiders.
Vegas,
the Vegas Raiders, right. Mm-hmm. Does that mean Dion calls up, picks up the phone, calls Mark Davis, calls his pal Tom Brady, calls his good friend Antonio Pierce, those two are tight, you know? Yeah. Hey, not for nothing, I might be interested in becoming the assistant coach for defensive backs if Shadur makes his way to the Raiders. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're the Raiders, you get that phone call from Dion. Are you jumping all over that? Is that a good thing, Joe, in your opinion? Like, A, do you want to have Dion on staff if you're the coaching staff? Mm-hmm. If he is on staff, do you think he's NFL ready? Or do you think it's just a recipe for disaster if that kid doesn't pan out?
I mean, it's two different ways you can look at it. It could be a disaster if it doesn't work out well. Absolutely. Because not only, let's just say Sanders is your DB coach, not even assistant. You just make him your DB coach because he's probably the best, if not one of the best to ever do it.
No doubt.
How amazing would that be for corners to come into Vegas and be like, oh my God, I'm going to be coached up by Dion right now. There's no way to say it, but he's got a ton of experience at that position. Why wouldn't you want him to coach your DBs?
Right.
I think that would be, from outside looking in, I think it would be an amazing move. But there's also the other part of it where if Shadur struggles, if it doesn't work out because, I don't know, the offensive coordinator that they end up getting is no good, you know? Is that going to create some turmoil there inside the locker room? Some, you know, resentment from Deion Sanders to be like, Mark, Tom, you guys told me that you were going to take care of my boy. Not like he's struggling. You guys got to do something else. Is there going to be a lot of knee jerk decisions in the coaching staff just because something isn't working out right away? So there's also that part of it too. I just don't know. I think it's a smart move to bring him in as like maybe a DB coach to that nature, but it's also you got to be wary about that because he has star power because he's been a coach, a head coach anyway in college ranks.
Right.
But how much is that when he gets over into the NFL as a DB coach, then he says, oh, you know what? I could do a better job than that guy.
Well, there is part of that. You're right. You do run the risk of that. But there's also the other side of it, which is, hey, come in, be the DB coach or special assistant. You know, we can figure out the title, right? But essentially, you know, work with the DBs because that's where we know you. Now, think, like, to your point, think of the benefits. Free agents. You're not going to have to work hard to get a free agent corner or safety to come join the Raiders if Dion's back there. B, players still love prime time. You know, like whenever you talk to these players, they and rightfully so, they love the guy, right?
Absolutely.
Now, it's no secret he wants to be an NFL head coach. Like, there's no secret about that. Yeah. What's better than a couple years apprenticeship, couple of seasons apprenticeship at the NFL level? And who knows, when Pierce's number comes up, then you've got Dion. Now you can't argue with he has no experience or whatever, right? He can move into that. You have a homegrown coach again that you could put into that spot. So on the whole, I see what you're talking about. Like, hey, what if my kid doesn't pan out? But honestly, ball don't lie. If the kid is playing well, look, all of us know when it's the kid and all of us know when it's the coach for the most part. Mm-hmm. All of us can tell. So I think that kind of works itself out, to be honest with you. But for all the positive, like for all the money you're going to invest in the kid, if you need to put butts in seats in Vegas, let's get Deion and Shadur there. If I'm the Raiders, no doubt in my mind, you've got Brady there working things out. I think it might be a positive, Joe, to get him over there. All right, let's get a quick question in here before we forget him. The boss, William Del Pilar, says, they're saying Mayo may have lost the locker room, talking about whether Mayo's on the hot seat. And he says, and don't forget this team pretty much returned the D and have played worse. Oh, I guess maybe means defense. He ruined the D. Yeah. However, give the man at least 3 seasons to rebuild. Yeah, William, and I think that's what Joe was saying. Like, these coaches now, they're on a worse hot seat than the franchise quarterback because look what happened in Chicago. Not saying that Eberflus didn't deserve to get canned. He did, let's face it. But they're not going to pick Eberflus over Caleb Williams. No way, no how. You're right. They should, you know, coaches. Now, the only positive thing, since coaching contracts are not under the salary cap, these coaches can go in and demand, okay, you signed me for 5 years. I want all that guaranteed. So even if you fire me, I'm getting paid out for the full length of the contract, right? It's like a Deshaun Watson type contract, but for coaches. Mm-hmm. And owners don't mind doing it because there's no salary cap for coach salaries. Yeah. So you can pay them anything they want. Yeah. As long as you don't mind paying it, they'll take it and it's cool. Right. So to some extent, they're a little bit better off because they do have that, sort of financial security. But before we move on, since William did, join in, let's remind everybody that this Thursday, December 12th, Joe, we're going to have the 100th episode of Points on the Board. Join us for a live stream, 10 a.m. Eastern time, 10 a.m. Eastern time, Thursday, December 12th, we're going to have Michael Fabiano, formerly of CBS Sports, formerly of the NFL Network. I think he might be at Sports Illustrated right now. But Fab's a legend in the game for fantasy sports. He'll be joining us along with Bob Harris. Anybody who's ever picked up one of those fantasy magazines every summer, you know who Bob Harris is. Harris is the man. He's also on SiriusXM Satellite Radio Fantasy Channel. And, of course, William Del Pilar, one of the co-founders here at Grumblings Media, and myself, Big John, pulling me back into the fantasy fray. Why? Because we're talking about the history of fantasy sports, a book by author Larry Schechter, who I think you, Joe, you and Jimmy – had him on earlier this season, and you talked with Larry about his book. Interesting guy, the book that he wrote. But what's better than reading a book about fantasy sports, living it with OGs of the industry, Joe, that were there for the whole thing? So, yeah, join us if you can Thursday, December 12th, 10 a.m. Eastern. And we'll be taking all your questions. So if you've got any questions about dirt, anything that we feel we can legally tell you without getting sued, Joe – join us here Thursday. We'll talk about it as long as our lawyers let us talk about it. But Joe, moving on a little bit, let's talk now. You know, you had an interesting question, you know, doing show prep because, you know, I'm not Jimmy, so my mind doesn't work as quick as his does, Joe. You sent me a couple of things to think about, and one of them was you said, you know, hey, Big John, what do you think the Vikings are going to do with Daniel Jones? Is he their future? Like, why would they pick him up? And why is he sitting on a 10-2 team, 11-2 teams roster right now? So, Joe, I'll ask you, is Daniel Jones part of the future under center in Minnesota?
I think there's an opportunity for Daniel Jones to be. And it's kind of amazing to think about, but Kevin O'Connell, the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, came out publicly and just stated, you know, once they signed him, they're like, oh, you know, I've always watched Daniel Jones from afar. I like his attributes. I think I could work with him. If that ever came about, I would like the opportunity to work with him. And then here you go. Becomes a free agent. He ends up choosing to sign with Minnesota Vikings. He's on the practice squad currently, learning the playbook, learning the plays. And under Kevin O'Connell, listen, we've seen Kevin O'Connell, who happened to like Sam Darnold last year, and said, oh, I would like the opportunity to work with Sam Darnold. And everything kind of fell into place where Kirk moved on. They moved on from Kirk Cousins. Give me Sam Darnold. Let's sign him to a one-year deal. Let's see if this whole thing can work.
Right.
And it's working. It's not the answer with Sam Darnold, because it's not like Sam Darnold is just destroying the NFL as a quarterback. So by bringing in Daniel Jones, it was a very interesting move to me, because Kevin O'Connell said the same thing about Sam Darnold a year prior, said the same thing about Jones, brings him in, and now you look forward to next year, and everyone's like, wait. J.J. McCarthy got drafted.
Right.
J.J. McCarthy's the future. Well, here's something. For everybody that was down on Sam Darnold, said there's no way he'll be the starter in the offseason, he flat out beat J.J. McCarthy in the competition. He earned that starting job. And now, begs the question, maybe J.J. McCarthy just isn't ready for the NFL. Maybe he needs further development with Kevin O'Connell in order to be. So because of that, and you bringing in Daniel Jones, it makes me think, I don't know, like, maybe there's a quarterback competition brewing where it's going to be Daniel Jones and J.J. next year.
Well, I do think there might be a quarterback competition, but I don't think it's going to be the three of them, right? It's not going to be McCarthy, Darnold, and
Darnold's going to be gone.
He's going to be gone. Now, I think by signing Jones, as much as I loathed him as the starter in New York,
right,
I do think, at the very least, he's one of the best backup QBs in the NFL you could have. Mm-hmm. You could do a lot worse than Daniel Jones as a backup QB, right? So at the very least. Huh? Yeah.
Gardner Minshew?
Yeah.
The Raiders missed on that one.
Yeah, exactly, right? So if nothing else, it was a shrewd move by the Vikings to bring him in as insurance, as backup insurance, if nothing else, for this year's playoff run. Now, going into next year, Darnold can walk. I'm assuming that the Vikings might tag him and trade him. That's a possibility as well, if he has value around the league. Hold on to Jones and then develop McCarthy. I mean, there's a lot at play. I love the Vikings situation because they have a lot of options, right? They could tag him and or have a deal worked out, right, where they could say, like, look, you know, you want us to tag him? Then we'll trade him to you and then, you know, send us like a – even if they get like a day two pick, a day three pick. Why? He's walking for nothing, right, unless you're just counting on the compensatory, right?
Yeah.
Daniel Jones – yeah, backup quarterback at worst. Backup quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, the reality financially is you want to develop McCarthy. He's under contract for 5 years.
100%.
Very, very cap-friendly 5-year deal for a potential starting quarterback. You've got to pay Jefferson. You already have, but Addison's coming up. And listen, I don't know when somebody woke up and said, start throwing the ball to Addison again this year. But the last couple of weeks, the guy's been off the charts.
Big John.
He's been smoking hot.
Big John, it was because Kevin O'Connell, I heard rumors that he was checking out Grumblings Media on that show on Blitzside Blitz. And he kind of heard us talk about, hey, what about this Jordan Addison guy? Why aren't you throwing it to him more? And then, lo and behold, Addison has gone off the last couple of weeks.
That was a great call by you guys. And look, the truth of the matter was he took up a lot of slack last year as a rookie and came through. Now, I understand there's these rumors, personality issues, some conflicts off the field, but that's immaturity. That can be worked on. Right. If the player is willing, that can be worked on early in a career. You get that AB stuff at the end of a career, that's a bigger problem. Like 5 years in, you don't want to hear about this crap. Year one, year two, people forget, these are 21, 22, 23-year-old kids, man. Think of yourself at that age. You made mistakes, man. And if I had that money to toss around, there wouldn't be enough skirts for me to chase. You know what I mean? That'd be my number one thing on my mind, Joe. Yeah. So I don't blame these guys when they lose their way initially, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can work on that.
Yeah.
But think about this. You've got J.J. You've got Addison. You've got Hockenson, who'll be back you know, a full year removed from that injury, right? Because he's, he's starting to get warmed up now. Like the hope is he'll be 100%, really 100% by playoff time, right?
I know.
Now next year, going into next season, you've got all three of these great receiving weapons. Whoever steps under center is going to be like a, leading a charmed life, in my opinion, right? Mm-hmm. So, so, you know, you take care of your QB situation, focus on defense in the coming draft. The Vikings are going to be someone to contend with again because they're the best, what is it, 11-2 team that no one ever heard of right now. So, you know what I mean? We're not giving them enough props. So to me, once you settle that quarterback question, to your point, I think that's going to be their key focus and the coach sitting down and saying like, hey, I got to figure this out. I'm confident in what I can do. Mm-hmm. Now, you're right. Darnold, one way or another, is going to be gone. So the question is it going to be McCarthy or Jones? I'm still leaning that because of the financial situations and everything like that, I think it's going to be JJ who will be given – it'll be his job to lose. I really do think it'll be his job to lose. And it might be. Like, he may – you're absolutely right. There were doubts about him coming out of Michigan, right? So it, he may not be NFL franchise level quarterback. He may not even be NFL starter level quarterback. We don't know yet. But I think they're going to give him every. I think it's his job to lose, man. What do you think?
Another funny thing too is what if Kevin O'Connell and the Vikings are going to play off this offseason, depending on who they can get cheaper. So Daniel Jones or Sam Darnold. You know, would they be willing to take lesser money to stay with Minnesota and compete for the quarterback job, or they want to try their chances out in free agency once again? Because I'll say this. Everybody's assuming that Darnold is 100% out, and I get it. You know, he signed a one-year deal. J.J. McCarthy's a future, so it looks like he's just going to walk out and be one and done. And he's displayed that he can be an adequate starting quarterback in the NFL. So a team that is struggling, that who knows, maybe a team that's picking high that doesn't want to use a high-end pick like that on a potential quarterback because there's no guarantees in the draft. You know that. That maybe you're like, well, I feel a little bit more comfortable if maybe we take a quarterback in the second round and maybe we sign Sam Darnold and try to figure things out that way.
Or trade down, you know. Like I've heard that about the Giants, Joe. Right? Like they're going to trade down, sign Darnold, and and take their you know, try to rebuild the roster in one shot this year, except for quarterback, right? And I mean, I understand it, and it kind of makes sense. Look, I heard Belichick talking the other day. And they were asking them about Darnold. This is the real deal. And I mean, you know Belichick, the way he responds, driest monotone shit in the world. But he literally said, everyone knew Darnold was good except for the Jets.
Right.
That was the statement he made. Everyone knew Darnold was a good quarterback except for the Jets. And people forget, like he was what, 21 when he came out? He was 20, 21 when he came out. He came out really young. So they really did not surround him with the right talent, and they also did. Okay, we're being William is losing his mind, so let me put up some of his comments. The first one is, I predicted Sam Darnold's comeback. After struggling in New York and Carolina, he found his footing in San Francisco, where he got the mentoring he lacked. He's now in Minnesota, a system he benefits from. Darnold is likely headed for a Baker Mayfield-esque contract unless he leads the 49ers to unless I'm assuming he means the Vikings to a Super Bowl win or a standout performance in the championship game, then big bucks. Yeah, I agree. If he goes deep into the playoffs this year, Joe, you're right. He's going to get $50 million a year from someone. You know what I mean? If he makes it to the if he makes it to the championship game, if he beats the Lions and gets to that, even to the NFC championship game, even if he falls a little short, he's getting $50 million a year guaranteed. Like, look, Kirk Two Chains went down to Atlanta, got what, $118 million, $108 million
Crazy.
Right. And he's at the back end of his career. So Darnold's still a young guy. He, you know, he's hitting his prime years. So yeah, I think he goes deep into the playoffs. You're absolutely. I think William is absolutely right. that he will be able to sort of write his own check. Look, there's a couple of teams who are – look, Tennessee is another possibility. I don't know about the I don't know about the coaching staff in Tennessee. I've seen enough of Will Levis. I don't think that he's turning into a cut rate Daniel Jones. You know, the turnovers, the not seeing the field. The, you know, I see that guy play, and I'm like, yeah, you guys just have Daniel Jones, but with a stronger arm. You know, like, so they got to figure out what they're going to do with him.
Likes mayonnaise.
Yeah, I don't know what's going. Mayonnaise. I don't know what's going on with him. You know. But, you know, there's going to be a couple of teams. Look, the Jets, I don't know what's going on with Sam.
It sounds like Rodgers is out of there after this season.
That'd be the best thing that can happen for the Jets. It's like, why prolong? Just rip the scab. Just get it over with.
But, like, I mean, it's the thing that, you know, with franchises like this, like, they continuously rotate through quarterbacks, and they still have yet to have an answer. So, moving on from Rodgers, okay, fine. But, okay, what's the answer now?
Like, well, I think Darnold becomes an answer for them if they're willing to admit that they cut him loose too early. If he's willing to go back to New York, I don't know.
I don't think he'll go back. I don't think
you don't think so.
He's going to have way more suitors than just the Jets.
Oh, I agree with you. But I honestly
think that if the Jets came calling and he's got six other teams that said, "Hey, we really want you to be our starter," he's going to be like, "You are calling me now? Are you guys crazy? No."
But at the same time, you know what, Joe? What's sweeter than that? The guys who cut me thinking I wasn't any good?
Yep.
Now they're begging me to come back, bro. Like, there's nothing better that strokes the male ego than, "We were wrong about you. Please come back and be our savior," right?
Yeah.
But that's an interesting thing to think of. All right, let's move on to the last topic here. If the season were to end today, you know, there's a pattern with my questions, Joe. Who gets your vote for MVP? If the season were 10 today, who gets your vote for MVP? There's a lot of good names to choose from, Joe.
Yeah, there's a lot. And a lot of people, I think, are going to say, "Oh, you got to take Lamar Jackson. Got to take him." Don't get me wrong. Lamar Jackson's having a phenomenal year. Like, he is killing it. But my take on that is the fact that the reason why he's killing it is because you brought in Derrick Henry, and everybody's worried about Henry's running so much so that it's making Lamar look so much better. So that's where I'm kind of like, I get it. The stats are there. I get all that. But I got to say, like, MVP to me is not just about stats. It's about also you have to be one of those special players that kind of lift your team up. And
you make the people around you better. You make the people around you better. Yeah.
Make the people around you better. And, like, your play in general is basically kind of carrying the team in a sense. I got to say that Saquon Barkley is having one hell of a year this year, where I know it's not common that a running back gets MVP, but this has got to be the exception. The Saquon Barkley is absolutely making the Eagles so much better on offense. Because when they're in need of something to happen, here, Saquon, take this ball and then run for 30 yards.
Right,
a touchdown. So to me, I would argue like maybe Saquon Barkley would be one of my guys that you gotta give it up to him and deservedly so should get the MVP.
Right. So you're going with Saquon for that MVP?
Yes, I am. Right now, that makes a lot of sense.
Listen, man, I can't argue with you because, look, I've been a mark for Saquon since Penn State. I was so happy when the Giants took him. A year ahead of when they drafted him, I'm like, please get in the top two so we could get Saquon. And we got him. I was thrilled. Anybody who knows me will tell you I was doing whatever could be described as being close to cartwheels when that happened. So, and just to tune in people, let me just quickly read off some of his stats. 1,623 yards rushing, 11 touchdowns on the ground, 29 catches for 267 yards through the air, and another two touchdowns. So he's accounting for 13 total touchdowns. So you're right. And, of course, one of the plays that stands out in everyone's mind, the backwards leapfrog over the defender to get another 10 yards. I've never seen that outside of a pro wrestling ring where someone does the reverse leapfrog over a charging guy. I thought I was watching WWE there for a second. So, listen, I have little to nothing to say about Saquon Barkley as the, if it were held today, MVP. And to your point, the Eagles are playing better as a team because of him. What's the difference between this year and last year? Saquon. That's it.
And not to mention, Saquon's healthy. He's staying healthy, which is critical for him.
Something he could never do with the Giants.
I don't know what that was. Is it training?
I think there's like no offensive line. So like here, at least he's got a professional offensive line in front of him with the Giants. True. He was getting beat up, and they had no other options. To be fair to him, he was their first, second, and third option on every play.
There is.
Go ahead.
Just real quick, there is a running back that is coming out in the draft. He's from Boise State. A lot of people know him. He's a Heisman candidate. He might even win it. Ashton Jeanty, in my mind, I haven't seen a running back of his caliber in quite some time. And a guy that's so special, he's on the brink of breaking Barry Sanders' records.
Yeah.
Nobody thought was possible.
Right.
But here comes this kid.
I think he's someone to keep an eye on. If you're in a fantasy dynasty league, keep your eye on that guy. You might want to take him in the first round. He's worth that sort of risk. Yeah. But I will say, Joe, the other sort of trendy pick is Josh Allen. And it makes sense too, right? Barkley and Allen are both on winning teams. I know it's not supposed to enter into the equation, but let's face it, MVP is voted on by the Pro Football Writers of America. I used to be part of that organization a long time ago. When I put my vote in, I'll be honest with you, I looked to see who was – like, you could not win if you were on a losing team. You didn't have to necessarily be on a playoff team, but if you were on, like, a 2-14 team, you weren't winning the MVP. You know what I mean? It's like, what's the point? But there's one guy that I think is certainly worthy of it, and that's Joe Burrow. The Bengals are not having the best of years, right? But look at what that guy's done, and he's gotten beaten senseless this year. Not just the sacks, but I mean, amazingly, for every call that Pat Mahomes gets, Joe Burrow, I think, is required by law to take two chops to the head, because that guy gets beat up more than any quarterback I've seen who's not a runner. That's the other thing. He's not necessarily a scrambler. He stays in the pocket. And for a quarterback that stays in the pocket, I've seen him multiple times this season just gotten the hell beaten out of him after he lets go of the ball with no calls for the most part. And this guy's having a season, 3,700 yards passing in 13 games. He's played in every game, hasn't missed a game, which, again, in and of itself is amazing given his history and how much he's getting beat up this year. 33 touchdowns to just 6 interceptions, and he's also added a rushing TD.
And by the way, he's leading the league currently in passing yards.
Yeah, 3,706. So when you look at it, if the Bengals were in playoff contention, we'd be talking about Burrow, I think, as a potential MVP right now. The fact that he's not on a winning team and he's not on a good team, I think that hurts him a lot. Josh Allen, by comparison, has been doing, fabulous season again for the Bills. 3,000 yards passing, 23 touchdowns, only 5 interceptions, 416 yards rushing, 9 TDs on the ground for Allen. And amazingly enough, a receiving TD off that weird Amari Cooper, lateral, whatever. That counts in the record books. Hot potato. That counted in the record books as a reception TD. So the guy is responsible through 13 games. He's responsible for 33 touchdowns, which is astounding right now. Yeah. So I think the people who are beating the drum for him and the fact that quarterbacks tend to win this award, I think it would probably be Josh Allen in my book. But here's another one, too, on the Bengals. How can we forget about Jamar? Jamar Chase, 93 catches, 1,300 yards, 15 touchdowns already, averaging more than a TD a game. That's astounding. And when you think of all this offensive talent, because T. Higgins is having a great year, too. I mean, he was hurt, but he's having a great year for the games that he has played. All that offensive talent, And what does it come down to? Defense, yeah. And not having one. No. That's what's killing the Bengals. And what was I saw a stat the other day. They're the only team to lose four games in the season where they scored more than 30 points.
Mm-hmm.
Like something crazy like that. So, so I think Saquon, like if I'm being honest, I probably vote with you. But just to be contrarian to you, I think I would go with Josh Allen. But hey, Joe, listen, we're coming up on the hour.
We are.
So I'm going to start wrapping up. But before we do, give me your 2-minute assessment of the Thursday night game, Rams at 49ers. 7-6 Rams, 6-7. Literally, I think one of these teams is fighting for their potential wild card berth in this division, right? So you tell me, who do you got in this game?
That's the thing, though, too, is like every time I pick the Rams, they end up losing. And then when I say, oh, I'm done with them. I'm absolutely done with them. They're healthy, but they still lose. And then they end up winning. So it's one of those seasons with the Rams. They are healthy, though. Like, that's the big thing for them. Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp, you know, Stafford's being able to sling it all over the football field. But here's the other crazy thing is that long forgotten Tyler Higbee at tight end is now returning. I don't know if it's going to be for Thursday night or for the following week, but he's very close in returning. If he does, now you're looking at a team that is well-equipped offensively, especially with that young defense that could maybe make that little bit of a surge for that wild card. The Niners, on the other hand, they've been struggling all year long. They've had numerous injuries, whether it be corners and your safety and your running backs now, and it's been absolutely insane for the Niners, up and down battle for them. The Niners have Brock Purdy back, and I think that as long as Purdy's there and ready to go, that the team always has a chance to win. This is going to be a amazing division rivalry type of thing with the Niners and the Rams. I just can't jump on the Rams wagon because they keep I don't know what to do here. So I think what I'm going to say is I'm going to go with the Niners getting a little bit healthier this week. I know they have Isaac Garendo, who actually got injured last week. They're waiting to monitor him throughout the week to see if he's a go or not. But even if he isn't, I still think the Niners do just enough to get the win here. Give me the Niners.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I'll go with the Rams just because I think they're on a bit of a hot streak.
Win.
Yeah, and they're coming off that great game, even though, let's face it, on that 4th and 5, the refs totally missed the false start. But, you know, luck favors the prepared, as they say, right? So I think I'll take the Rams. I think they're on a bit of a hot streak. I think, and the key point here is, you're right, the Niners are beat up. It seems like every year they're down to their 5th running back, and they find some guy who can still rush for 100 yards, right? But I think it's catching up to them. You know, Garendo's, like, banged up now. Mason, McCaffrey, who knows? I don't even know who the 4th guy is at this point. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. When you count all the guys who are hurt, right? Ayuk is out, obviously has been out. He's out for the year. So, you know, they're relying more on Kittle. They're relying more on Debo
Juwan Jennings.
Juwan Jennings, who's starting to cool off a little bit. So I think I'll go with the Rams, but it'll be a fun game to watch. They're close teams. They both got incentive. All right, everyone. This has been the Blindside Blitz. Before we go, let me once again pop up and say, join us this Thursday night, December 12th, 10 p.m. I'm sorry, 10 a.m. Eastern time to catch Points on the Board, the 100th episode featuring fantasy sports legends Michael Fabiano, Bob Harris, William Del Pilar, and myself, Big John. So join us live December 12th, 10 a.m. right here, YouTube, X, Rumble, Facebook. Ask us all the questions you can. We'll be talking about the history of fantasy sports. So join us if you can. My friend, Joe DiCapita. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, and
thank you for having me on board, sitting in for the suddenly indisposed Jimmy McPhee. He's fine, everyone. He just had something come up in the last minute. Jimmy will be here again next Tuesday, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com. Until then, have a good night and peace out, everyone.
Later, Big.